The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Now, a gentleman who's not that annoyed, I think, with anything at the moment, at least I hope not, is sitting across from me. He's in the world of politics, but not in the rough and tumble in the way that we saw over the last couple of days. And he's really in to us to talk about his health, because he was with us last October and he was undergoing treatment for cancer of the liver. And was quite philosophical, I felt, about the time. Anyway, he's been through the treatment. He's been through a transplant and he's with us in studio now. Senator David Norris, how are you?
Hello, Mary. I'm nearly as good as you. You look smashing today.
Well, thank you so much indeed. Thank you very much indeed. I was just back from my holiday, so...
Oh, that explains yeah. it. Yeah. But I was in the rough and tumble of politics. In fact, quite recently, the only time I came out from convalescing was to vote on the banking inquiry. And it was my vote that created the trouble. And afterwards, they all were saying...
You were always a troublemaker, David.
Oh, yes,
David,
but when I saw the opportunity to create an independent commission, I thought, this is it. This will clear the politics out of it. So I voted for Mark McSherry, having already voted Sean Barrett in. And then, even though they knew what the situation was, the government kept saying that this was just a Fianna Fáil stroke. Fianna Fáil sat there with their mouths open as I did the job. So I'm in the rough and tumble to a certain extent.
Right. Yeah. Are you disappointed about that banking inquiry?
I never thought it was going to be very much, but I think, you know, with Joe Higgins in it, I think it will ask questions. I don't think it would ever come up with answers, but I think they'll ask a few questions they otherwise might not. Stephen Donnelly would have been exceptionally good. You know, it's extraordinary the way both the far anything in this country, far right and far left, are both very good and ask similar questions. They come up with different answers, but they're very, very good.
Right. Well, anyway,
anyway, back to your health.
Yeah. No. How? What? You tell us again. You got diagnosed with liver cancer.
Yes.
And usually that's a kind of a scary diagnosis.
It used to be fatal.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you were treated with chemo and you got a transplant. But take us through what it was like.
Well, the first thing I knew was I knew I wasn't well and I was pushing, you know, to get examined. And one of the doctors in Vincent's, and I pay tribute to St. Vincent's Hospital next door from here? It's absolutely wonderful. I mean, the care they give the patients, public and private, is quite outstanding. And the medical team, the transplant team, is a world-class team. Anyway, I knew I wasn't well. Went in and the doctor, the consultant said, I think we'll take another look at the liver. While I was waiting for the results, I got this appalling pain. I've never experienced anything like it. And I suffered through it. But at 7 o'clock in the morning, I rang and they said, come in straight away. And I came in and waiting for the morphine was the longest 3 minutes in my life in the hospital. But after that, everything was grand. And I loved hospital, you know, having my bed made and have lots of people to talk to, a nice view of the Dublin Mountains, the newspapers, very good food, and Class A drugs.
Well, were you not nervous? Some people are afraid of infections in hospital now.
Well, the first time I went in for the transplant, I was, because I was in a very busy ward and the lavatory wasn't clean. And I raised that with the authorities there.
Well, I think a lot of people are actually afraid of hospitals at this stage.
And quite rightly, because of the infection.
You hear about MRSA, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think something like over 100,000 people didn't turn up over 4 years for their appointments. I mean, how can a hospital work if people are so cavalier? And then there are all the people in accident and emergency at the weekends who are high as a kite on drugs and drink and peeing all over the place and vomiting, and it's disgusting. I mean, the citizens should take some responsibility for their health service. It's not just the nurses and the doctors, it is the patients and their families.
Okay, so you got your happy drugs.
Yes.
And did you start on chemo straight away?
Yes. Yes, I had, I think, 5 bashes of this. It's a new thing, chemoembolization. It's very targeted and it just hits the affected area. It doesn't damage the surrounding bits very much and you don't lose your hair, which I was rather disappointed. So I got rid of the hair anyway because I
am looking at the hair on your face. You didn't get rid of the hair.
Well, I did. I had it all shaved off, top and bottom, to get votes for the Senate, to keep the Senate. Because while I was in hospital, all the Senate stuff erupted and it looked as if we were going to lose the thing, because a couple of our colleagues made it a vanity project and excluded everybody else. But Sean Barrett and John Crown and myself, in the last 10 days, we turned it around. I came straight out of hospital in a taxi to make a speech in the Senate about it.
Right. Well, get back into hospital now and tell it is. So they targeted this.
Yes.
Yeah. And it worked.
Yes, they reduced it down. There are certain levels that you have to be at in order to have a transplant. And I was above them, but I was very fit. And they brought them down to within these levels. And then I went ahead and had the transplant.
Yeah.
And I went down and I said to the doctor afterwards, the surgeon, you know, I felt going in there at about a 30% chance of getting out alive. And he said, if that, because they had to operate through the tumour to get at the artery that was being blocked.
When you were going in thinking you had a 30% chance, that meant you thought you had a 70% chance of never waking up again.
Well, not in hospital, but you never know where I might get to.
And no nerves about that?
No, it's a perfectly natural thing. I mean, you see it in the plants and the trees and birds, animals, fish, everything. Everything dies. It has its allotted space. Sometimes we're able to push it a bit, but not very much. And it's a blink of an eyelid in the scope of eternity. And I have a strong religious faith, which if it's misguided, it's misguided, and I won't know anything about it. But it's strong and it comforts me. And yeah, and I've had a wonderful life.
So were you praying as you went in?
No. No, I said my prayers before. But I don't think I was praying. I was just taking in everything, watching everything, looking at all the machines and all this. And, you know, they put on these little knickery things on you. And they just hooked me up to the anaesthetic. And one of the surgeons leaned over and said, how are you this morning? And I whipped the green sheet off and I said, bloody gorgeous, don't you agree? I'm wearing my frilly knickers just for you. We sent out to Anne Summers. And I saw this very puzzled face.
As you were on the
slab,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I would think that's pretty unusual. I have to say, as a card-carrying coward,
yes,
my heart would have been thumping with terror.
Well, I'm a coward too, but there are things you can do nothing about. Well, what's the point in worrying about them? I mean, these are really superb professionals. You're in their hands. If something goes wrong, it goes wrong. But, you know, I had every confidence in them doing their best for me. And that was all I could ask for. And apart from that, I love the drugs. I really genuinely do. It's a treat. You know, this lovely buzzy feeling of kind of swirling around and then levitating up to the ceiling. And you don't care what happens. You don't give a damn.
Listen, don't be encouraging people. That's what I'm trying to discourage them from. And do you recall coming to?
I do. I came through in the intensive care unit and I thought I was in Australia. I don't know why. I was kind of, felt as if I was hanging upside down with all kinds of tubes out of me. And there was just blue light and machines everywhere. And I thought, oh my God, this is Australia. How did I get here? What put it into my mind there was Australia? I just do not know.
And how long was your recovery?
Well, I was in intensive care for 2 days and then in a high dependency unit.
Just 2 days?
Yeah, but then I was in a high dependency unit.
Right.
And that just means slightly less wires and things. But they're keeping an eye on you all the time.
Right.
And then I went in almost next door to a convalescent home, which was absolutely lovely.
And how long after the operation were you up on your feet?
Within about 3 days. I think.
Really?
Yeah. But I wasn't going very far.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me, you did have problems with rejection, didn't you?
Well, that was about 3 weeks ago. I had a rejection episode. But they monitored the blood and they brought me in. And they said it was coming up to a weekend, so they'd have to do it as an emergency. So they went down. What's this artery here?
Your aorta?
No, it's a particular, the jugular. They said, we're going to have to put the machine down, the jugular. So I said, I wish you hadn't told me that. You should have told me that afterwards because they're gone for the jugular.
And are you taking anti-rejection drugs
yes,
every day?
Yes, I take about 17 pills.
Every day?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I just took about 8 or 9 of them before I came out this morning, different colours. But I get them in a blister pack from the local chemist. So they're marked morning, midday, evening, bedtime.
Because you could forget, I mean, we've
very easily.
That, very easily.
And I don't know what the consequences of that would be.
And when will you feel that you will be fully recovered?
Well, they say it takes a year.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you must think of the donor.
No. No. I don't.
Do you not?
No.
Have you any
idea? I occasionally think. I know that it was a woman who was a little younger than myself, and I think of my liver going in and out of a supermarket in Castle Bar without me.
Right.
In somebody else's possession.
Right.
But I don't, I'm very grateful to the family and to the person.
But you don't know who they are.
No, and you never do. After 6 months, you write a letter, if you want.
Yeah.
And I would like to, and yeah. Thank them.
Yeah.
Because it's a remarkable thing. And, you know, the interesting thing was it cleared up a couple of problems. I mean, in recent years, I would wake up in the morning and I kind of stopped playing the piano because my fingers were quite painful and sausagey. That must have been just poison from the defective liver because after the operation, that just completely cleared up.
That's extraordinary.
But in compensation, God never opens one door, but he closes another.
Yeah.
I've got fidgety feet.
Which means?
Which means that I keep walking around in the bed at night. My feet keep wanting to move.
And is it directly related?
I have no idea. But I told the doctors and they gave me more magnesium. They said I was had a magnesium deficiency.
Right.
Do you think people really like all this stuff about medicine in the middle of the morning? I suppose they do.
Well,
makes them feel safe.
Well, it makes them feel lucky, I yeah. presume.
But I don't think cancer is all that dreadful a thing. You know, it can be awful when it attacks a young person with young children, where there's pain or lack of breath or this sort of stuff. But that's unusual nowadays because of the medical things. And it's just your own cells. I mean, it's not an invasion of the body snatchers.
Right. Now, you did, however, prepare your own funeral.
I did, yes. I have it done. That was the one thing. And the one thing I would say to anybody going into hospital or anybody, when you're 50, I think you need to make a will. And you need to, if you want, organise your funeral in one little way or just make sure you have some place to be buried or, you know. And I, going in for the first operation, the cancer operation, I realised I hadn't really finalised my will and I hadn't finalised the funeral arrangements. I have everything done down to the last detail. I had my plot bought for many years, but I have the whole service, the music, the hymns, the tunes for the hymns, and I've recorded a piece because I'm having the last word.
Is it? And you have the obituary as well. Last night to the inexpressible grief.
Yes, but there was a thing
of an inconsolable nation.
Decades of the rosary were recited outside the front door, which could be heard as far as Stephen's Green, all this sort of stuff. Yeah, I did that for somebody in the Irish Times many years ago because I wanted some research help. And he said, OK, but I'm refreshing the obituaries. I didn't even know they had an obituary of me. So he said, would you look over yours and tidy it up? I said, yes, absolutely. So I did this wonderful thing, which, of course, is completely useless. But they took it up then as a programme and they did it on RTE television. And it was really funny because they had footage of Erskine Childers' funeral and King George V's funeral and they had a solemn voice reciting all this stuff. It was hysterical.
The rosary was rattled waiting until his neighbours could be heard as far away as Croke Park.
Which will be silent.
Which will be silent, indeed it will. My goodness, we did end up in a farcical situation. We still are in it.
I think that was mad. I mean, having the Taoiseach of the country involved in a pop concert, I mean, an absolute nonsense. That and all the fuss about the two towers of the Ringsend power station, of course they should pull them down. They're
not
ugly.
Everybody thinks
oh,
so.
I know a lot of people think, but you see, there are people who are born after they were built, so it's part of their skyline. I felt the same way about the seven chimneys of the original Pigeon House. But these are just disgusting old industrial detritus and they should be pulled down. I mean, Dublin is a beautiful city. It's not a power station.
No, but I mean, we don't have many vertical entities within it. But just to come back to what you were talking about, the Taoiseach, Garth Brooks management have directly reached out to the Taoiseach Enda Kenny. This is in the Irish Independent today, in a bid to salvage. "We've tried to reach out, but his immediate camp has not heard anything back."
But didn't Enda give them his phone number? Didn't he say to people, you know, "Here's
call
my phone
me,
number,
call
yes, call me."
Yeah, but it was understood, it says here, that an email was sent to Mr. Kenny in the middle of the formation of a new government.
I know, it's wonderful, isn't it? Ludicrous.
Mind you, for the 400,000 people who've spent their money, I presume they're hoping that it'll get changed one way or another.
Well, yes.
You know?
And he's a good singer. I mean, I've always loved the Friends in Low Places and the way the voice goes down. It's really... I'm a bit of an old jelly bag now.
So tell me, in terms of yourself, are you going to go back full time into the Shannons now?
Yes, I am, because there is work to do, and I want to oppose the government's legislation for the reform of the Senate, because they're concentrating entirely on the university seats. They've had them in their eyes for a long time. And if you look at what's happening, their idea of reform is to take the university seats, the only democratically elected group, the only democratic elected with 160 or 190,000 voters. They're expanding that for six seats to 850,000. The next are the councils, where there'll be less than 1,000 voters, all political, for 43 seats. And then there's the golden ticket. Enda, when he's not fixing Garth Brooks, he'll be electing 11 people.
But it has always been thus.
But that doesn't make it right.
This is true.
And I've been campaigning ever since before I went into the Senate for the reform of the Senate, to give it a situation where the people would vote.
But on the other hand, if you take the 11, the Taoiseach's 11, in fairness to Enda Kenny, and he got...
it's very imaginative.
Very imaginative, and didn't put a whip on the people that he appointed.
Well, he couldn't.
Well, it had happened in the past that so-called independent people were appointed, but they've always voted with...
But a group of them declared themselves independent and formed a group.
But probably no Taoiseach will ever do it again because of that.
Well, that's quite possible, but he could always balance the numbers, because 11 is a lot in a 60-seater house. And I think it's very refreshing. Now, we both agree that Enda's selection of people was quite... remarkable, the people that he put in, and they've made a very considerable contribution. It was an insult to them, because the minute he'd put them in, he said he was going to abolish the Senate because it was useless. Useless. And what did the Senate do during the economic crisis? Well, I spoke out. I voted against the bank guarantee. I warned them what they were doing. I was the only person in either house to ask how much would this guarantee involve. And it came back with 400 million. And then I said, well, what is the gross national
million
product?
Million or billion?
Billion, sorry, billion. What is the gross national product of this country? 200 billion. So I said, you're giving a guarantee for more than twice our entire national income, or it'll never be called on.
That was the theory, wasn't it?
Yes. So there are all those things that I'm interested in, the reform of the Senate. And I, you know, I would like to explain to people that I've always been in favour of widening the electorate and bringing in the other colleges. But it has to be done in a way that doesn't damage the Senate, that doesn't damage the university representation. And what I think the government are doing is they're widening it up to such an extent that it'll be vulnerable to political party penetration, and they will just take over that. And that the Senate, you might as well forget the Senate then.
Yeah, mind you, for those who haven't gone to university,
yes,
they figure it's a bit unfair that people who have got degrees, you know, that there's an element of privilege.
Yes,
about
but why close down the only democratic bit? Because the rest of it isn't democratic. Surely the thing to do would be to make the remainder democratic, instead of closing down the one that is democratic.
Okay, caller says, great to hear the ever-vibrant David Norris back on the airwaves. Ireland is a better place with him in it. Long life and happiness to him. Marion, please give Senator Norris my best wishes. Glad he's on the mend. I once met him on Mary Street. I was sitting on my walker and we had a chat. A lovely man. David is such a breath of fresh air. He's making me laugh out loud here cooking the dinner, even though this is such a serious topic. Best best wishes to him. Anne Marion, David Norris is so funny, he's a tonic. Congrats to his indomitable spirit in the face of adversity.
Oh, isn't that lovely? Well, I have to say the Irish people were just wonderful. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of get well cards and oil from saints that I'd never heard of. Have you heard of Saint Peregrinatus?
No.
Patron saint of cancer, because he stood on one leg for 40 years and got cancer in it. But it's really fascinating and it's absolutely lovely. And my friends Gin and Tonic leave in pictures of the nice new Pope, who I think is going to save Christendom. And people are lovely. It was only, if I may say, the media during the presidential campaign who were vicious. But they're getting their comeuppance. 11 libel actions, and I've won 4 so far. I'm going to win the next 7. Too.
Well, we'll wait and see. That's in the hands of the courts, not in this studio. Anyway, I just want to say good health to you.
Thank you very much,
Thank you very much indeed for coming
It's
in.
A real pleasure.
Thank you
very much.